Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man. Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
Yo, 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 yo. Yo, what's up, y'all? GYB, we get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. I know I've said that this is a special show. I've said that maybe 500 times before, but this time I really mean it. I mean it this time, not like I didn't mean it the other times.
True.
But this time,
now
I mean
you don't have to lie.
Yeah, so it is what it is. We got, what's going on, Hal? You ready to rock and roll?
You know damn well, I'm ready.
Shout out to Andre. Andre's out in L.A. doing his thing. He's doing big things. Hopefully he'll actually get me a job in mainstream comedy at some point in time. So me and Harry are hoping for.
That's
but,
what we want.
Shout out to Dre. We got a special guest in the room. This is a good friend of mine. I mean, I love this dude to death. We don't see each other nearly as much as we should. Funny, one of the funniest dudes I know. He's in every commercial, everywhere, constantly. Shitload of them anyway. Give it up for my boy Chris Roach. Yo. Give it up for Chris Roach.
What's up, Dante? What's up, Harry?
Hey, man. Thank you for doing the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Are you setting up a studio there, back there? Because I see some egg cartons in the back.
Yes. So I got boxes of all that sound proofing crap, and I got a tiny closet over here that I'm gonna try to set up a voiceover booth in. You know.
Oh, nice.
You know how it is. You're just trying to diversify, trying to get income coming in. You know, when the stand-up's quiet and the acting's quiet. You know. Trying to diversify.
Now, you know, give you a quick tip since you're talking about this. You know they make a small circular booth you can sit on the desk.
I got that, too. I got that, too. Yeah.
Okay, you're going to put that in the studio, too?
I might use both.
You might be good with one. I know somebody that was doing voiceover just with that alone on the.
Yeah, I think I might do both because it's a little tight in there. So on the sides, I might go with those trucking blankets on the side and use these for like the front and top.
But
I've been having a friend of mine that's pretty good with voiceovers help me out, and
good,
you know, I just got to see if I can get air in there now.
That's the thing. They have a little portable AC that you could buy a company. I'll send you a link, but anyway.
Yeah,
how you been, bro?
Good,
I
mean, man.
To go off on a tangent. I'm just trying to, you know, Harry, I can't help myself helping people. You know what I mean? That's what I do.
That's what you do. That's what you're known for. Helping people and then stabbing people in the feet with ice picks.
I have done both. You know what they say? You want to diversify. I mean, we're just talking about that.
Right. Diversify. Yeah. Stabbing people in the feet. And
that's what they mean by a Renaissance man.
Right. What was the stabbing in the foot thing? Did I miss this?
This was years ago. Some guy was beating up my sister.
Oh, I thought it was a movie.
No. This is real life.
Because I remember you in that movie with Terrence Howard, and that was a good fight scene. You had a good scene.
Dante's a method actor.
Yeah.
He gets real in a character. I mean, he's been working on these parts, some of them 30 years.
I was with what's his name on Last of the Mohicans, and I went deep cover with what's the dude?
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Me and him, we had the same method actors, you know.
Somebody's messing with your sister, that's like instinct.
He dude was beating on my sister. And,
not cool.
And he somehow he got snatched off the street. From the story I hear,
right.
Somebody asked him what time it was, and then I don't know what happened. The lights was out, and he woke up in a van.
Yeah.
You know, and then the tragedy was that you know, because I wouldn't want anything to hurt. I wouldn't want to see anybody get hurt. But no. They might have wrapped his feet up in towels,
right?
And ice picked his feet and dropped him out on Hunts Point.
Whoa, that might have, man.
That's the rumor. I don't know. You know me. I don't gossip. No.
I heard about that going around.
It's going around. It's going around.
Remember when the kids would go around knocking people out for a few years there?
Oh, that was, you know, that was like the Bloods, I think, was doing that. And it was like a gang initiation.
Oh, yeah. People walking down the street, all of a sudden, bam!
Oh, I think it was either that or if they were slashing your face or some shit, some one or the other. You know.
I remember it was, wasn't it that they'd flick the headlights?
That was a different, they'd fight you and follow you and shoot you.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
If you get the headlight things?
They would flick the lights. If you flick back, they would follow you.
Yes, I heard about that. Or you give, yeah. If somebody had the brights on and you flick them back.
That's what you love about New York. It's so innovative. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just guys, just creativity is just teeming in New York. God. You know, different things. It's good to see you, bro. It's good to see you. The last time I saw you, we were doing shows at the Strip. I can see you in the back looking at watching my insanity.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You got a great stage persona.
Thank you, bro. Appreciate it.
You fill a stage, and not literally. You fill the stage.
Yeah, literally, too, now. Since we're getting older. You're
one of those guys that I consider to be like a master crowd work guy.
Oh, thank you, bro.
You're so good. Like, guys like you when... I'm trying to think about like a Jay Oakerson.
Big J, like, I say this to this day, nobody on the planet does crowd work better than Big J.
Yeah, it's really an art that, you know, like I'm a material guy, but once in a while I go into the crowd, I'm like, please say something I can use.
Oh, what you call it is really good now too. Andrew Schultz.
Andrew Schultz, yeah, he's good.
He's really, I remember when I first saw that dude, I was like, there's something special about that dude. The day I met him, I saw him, yeah.
Guys, you could sit on that stool and just have the confidence to command the room.
You know what it is too? I think you gotta trust that you're funny enough, that it will come. And if it's not funny, you got to kind of trust that. You got to trust that if you're not funny enough, you're interesting. And, right. And one of the things that I think that really makes you interesting when you're not using the audience, when you're not using them, do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So, you know, there's comics, and I will. It's the one time I'm not gonna name names, but there's people that'll have, they'll have like written crowd work.
Yeah, I know somebody like that. That's like very like stock.
Yeah. So you say something, you get the response, you go in this, you know. So it's kind of like a flow chart. If then right. This. If not, then this, and stuff like that. And it's just. You know, shout out to Aaron Burke.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, sorry.
Nice. All right. Early. Getting the names in early.
But, you know, he's a brilliant dude. I tease him because I think he's a great comic, and I think he's such an interesting dude.
Yeah.
And I think I really feel like he could be great if he actually tapped in to how interesting he is as a person. But that's a...
Yeah, I've seen him. He kills the crowd work too. But are you saying he does some of the stock stuff? Or
it's just
I don't see it. You know,
it's I mean, if every time you go out you do the same, you know, it turns out the same way.
Yeah, I know one guy that would go around and he'd see a blonde. He goes, "Hey, so what's your name? Oh, I'm sorry, you're a blonde. What's your name?
Oh,
yeah. I'm like, yeah, oh, when you see, you know."
What's
his name? Angel Salazar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he auditioned for Last Comic Standing on television, mind you. It was just for producers, but he did crowd work.
Really?
In front of producers as if there was a crowd in there.
Right, right.
And they passed him, I think. I don't even remember.
Yeah, why not?
But he's just like, hey, this guy over here is crazy. And you're like, there's nobody there. It's an empty comedy club. It's 10 in the morning.
Everyone should work with him once. It's just like
check it out.
Check it out. Hey, Chris. Yeah,
we had him on the show. He was great.
Yeah, yeah. Angel was great. You know what? Angel was great because he very grateful for what, like, very great, grateful for what he got from the business. You know what I mean? Just a guy, you know, like so often and not, we always talk about what we don't get and never talk about what we did get, you know?
Yeah.
And he was very grateful of the fact that he's been able to do this in comedy. I mean, I was going to make a point about the crowd work is like, you know, you're talking about the crowd work is there's a level of, so it's almost like if you're trying to, if you're using the crowd to get the laugh, right?
Yeah.
There's an inauthenticity in that. There's a lack of truthfulness in that. And when that lack of truthfulness is there, then the audience will go along with it because it's always in the context of a comedy club. It's like, okay, we're there to laugh and kind of it's a performance. But when you see somebody like Big J who does crowd work, like he's really asking a question and he doesn't have his stock answer ready. He's listening to you and you're receiving it. And as you're receiving it, as he's receiving it, then he trusts that he's smart enough to come up with something funny in the context, or that he really comes up with something funny, or that if it's not funny, he's comfortable with it not being funny. Well, he'll ask another question and probe a little deeper. And he just knows that he'll find that nugget. And, you know, he's probably about 25 years in comedy. And so he knows that anytime he's waited to do that. So what's interesting about that, you know, the show is relationship based, you know, but we've always kind of helped guys get laid, help guys get over breakups, help women understand what was going on, help whatever the fuck it was. And one of the things that I think is interesting about that is like all the principles that work in everything else also work in everything else, like cosmic comedy. Universe, cosmic
comedy and life.
Yeah. So it's comedy advice, but the comedy advice, if it really works and there's a truthfulness to it, it applies in everything that you do, you know?
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I find that you'll find guys will talk to women with the intent, with an ulterior motive. And because there's an ulterior motive, they can sniff out the fact that there's an ulterior motive because there's a disingenuousness to it. And then they reject you because of it.
Right. So you're saying like it can't be like crowd work can't be forced, or
like you can't fake it. Like you shouldn't fake it. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I see guys that use it almost as a crutch where, like, let's say you have a bit about riding a bicycle. They'll be like, hey, who rides a bicycle? Yeah, you ride a bicycle. Like they're going to the crowd that way.
Right.
But they're really just setting up their joke. They don't care.
Right.
What you're
right. Right. And the thing is, I do a writer's workshop, a comedy writer's workshop. I've been doing it like all through the COVID. I had a lot of young comics, like maybe sometimes like 15 at a time on a Zoom call. And I would do a writer's workshop. And Harry's actually sat in on a couple of them where, you know, I would always say, if you're going to do your dumb bicycle joke, right, just do your bicycle joke. You don't have to create this false connection between people to so that they, oh, yeah, we both ride bicycles. Like they're going to go, oh, okay, right. I ride a bike and you ride a bike. We're like the same, you know, it's just. Right. They go, okay, yeah, you rode a bike, and so does every person else in the fucking world rides a bike. My point being, the same thing happens with women. Are you married now or no?
I am, yes.
How long have you been married? Long time.
12
like
years.
12. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And y'all don't have kids. You just have a kid.
Yeah. The relationship? Yeah. 12 years. But we've been together for 20.
Wow.
20. Wow. Yeah.
Where'd y'all meet at?
We met at a club on Long Island.
A comedy club?
No, just a regular club, like dance club. This is before I started doing stand-up. I met her, and like 3 years later, I started doing stand-up.
Wow, how did that bitch good. You tricked her good. She thought, you had a promising career at something or some demeanor. You're like, haha, bitch. I'm gonna be in the arts. Good luck with that.
I hope you got money.
That's like when they get fat.
Yeah,
I didn't get it now.
Yes.
Did she have a hard time with it as it progressed? I mean, do you do a lot of road work or no?
I think she had a hard time with it when the road work started picking up. And I remember at first she was like saying to a friend of mine that I don't know. She's like, I didn't sign up for this. I don't know if I can handle it, him being on the road. But now it's like, you're going on the road, all right, get out of here. thank God. Thank God.
Right, because it gives you a little time away from each other and you kind of appreciate each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
And plus you're out making money too. So that's good.
How's the marriage? Good?
Yeah. 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 You know, it's a tough thing for a comic to find someone who's okay with what you're doing, especially when I wasn't a comic when she met me. It's one thing for somebody coming in and you're already an established name in comedy.
Right.
But I was, I was still managing a retail store.
Right.
And then I said, I think I want to try stand-up comedy. At least, hit a few open mics, see what happens. And it kind of went, next thing I know, I'm trekking into the city for acting classes. And it became this whole thing.
So she's watched the whole growth of everything. Yes. Yeah.
She's watched it. She's seen all the ups and downs, and I always say with the comedy, it's a lot of rejection, and then you bring in acting, and there's even more rejection. It's like you always say I get used to it, but sometimes every once in a while it catches up to you, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It just I did really good at acting initially because I didn't give a fuck about it. I didn't take acting classes and stuff like that. I never did. I mean, I think I took one or two acting classes, but I never really considered myself an actor because, people I knew that were acting, they went to acting class, they went to college for acting, that, it was like this extensive kind of dedication to it. But I think I've met really good actors in the process of me doing stuff, and a lot of them didn't do acting. I mean, it's definitely, your Angela Bassett, your Denzel Washington, they went. But I know people who just had really interesting lives, who just had characters that they ran into so many like characters that they could pull from, that they, I know that works for me. It's like if I do something, I'm playing a guy that I knew. There's a guy that I knew that was this guy, and then I just, it's almost like an impression of this guy who I knew. But it's really the you talk about the crowd work and everything. It's kind of just, I think when you start to, it's funny because you talk about the rejection. It's almost like you start to wonder if you're worthy of the things that you get.
Yeah.
You're going out and you're getting smacked down, you smack down, and on a cognitive level, you feel like, okay, this is on a cognitive level, on a conscious level, that there's a lot of no's to get to the yes.
Yeah.
And you understand that, and you believe that, but still getting punched in the face. No, you're not good enough. No, you're not good enough. Eventually it starts to affect you,
Yeah. Oh yeah. They always say, don't take it personally. And I mean, there are times you feel like as an actor, you have a good audition and then you move on.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll forget about an audition. I'll be like in my kitchen and the TV's on and I'll hear a line. I'm like, wait a second. Why does that line sound familiar? I go out. I'm like, hey, I auditioned for that.
Yeah. Or the other thing happens is where you audition for something, you forget about it. And then they call you. You're on hold for this. Are you available? This. And then you get something. And so I always took it as, look, I just read and I leave. You know,
yeah.
Half the time they don't know what they want anyway until they see it.
It's true. They always say that. They don't know what they're looking for.
They don't know what they're looking for. And then when they see it, they go, oh, that's it. So, you know, it's funny because you said that you were just saying how anytime they, you know, they keep sending you for these intimidating people and you're, but they have no, you know what I mean? Right. They have no idea. It's till they see you. I always say when I did Blacklist, the guy was supposed to be Polynesian. Right. So I go to this audition. I'm a regular black dude. Now, mind you, I've never played a black dude on anything ever. I've always played Latino, New Zealand, Hawaiian. So I get there and all these guys with Hawaiian shirts and long hair and ponytails and, you know, they're eating poi. And
right. ukuleles in hand.
I was gonna say that they got the little ukulele.
They're juggling pineapples and shit. And but I don't know if you find this the case. Do you find this to be the case? Big guys can't read copy.
I have a hard time memorizing. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know you, but I'm saying, I mean, you get booked, but I'm saying when we guys who I audition with, big dudes just aren't, they can't read copy. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of a thing where, like, because you're, I don't think big guys go, oh, I'm going to be an actor. You know what I mean? So yeah. the pickings are slim. So, right. Yeah, I mean, I always say that the success of Terry Crews is because he's not like he's an amazing actor, but he can read copy. You give him the line, he'll, and he shoots the gun. I mean, you know, he gets it. But so many dudes, like, I'm looking at all of these guys who are clearly Polynesian, Fiji. I mean, it smelled like coconut oil and everything. And you're like, and they just can't recopy because it's kind of so slim. I just watched the girl. I don't know if you see the girl on the Olympics, the black chick who just won the wrestling.
No, I saw the shot put. That was insane.
Yeah. So this black chick's the first black woman to win a wrestling, like, you know, regular professional wrestling, not professional wrestling, but collegiate style wrestling,
amateur Greco-Roman style wrestling.
And is that what she won?
I don't know which medal she won, but there's freestyle. There's, I believe, Greco-Roman. I don't know the other one.
She won a gold. And it's like, because she won a gold, now you're going to find there's so many people, so many little girls are going to see that and go, oh, yeah. I always wanted to wrestle. You know what I mean? And then it's kind of like the WNBA. When the WNBA first started, you had one girl who had a handle like Allen Iverson and then other girls who couldn't bounce the ball. And now the level of play, I mean, what is it, like 15 years now, Harry? Like
the WNBA has got, it's Pat. I think it's almost, I want to say
20.
Almost 20. Nah, yeah, almost 20.
Yeah.
It's got to be more than 20, actually.
Let me see.
Because 2001 is 20 years ago. The WNBA started in the mid 90s.
Right.
So it's over 20 years.
It's 20 years. So when, you know, when these things happen and people reach this level of expertise, it inspires the next. Great. It's like the I don't know if you watch MMA, but this guy Adesanya, this guy is a MMA dude.
Israel Adesanya.
Israel Adesanya. He grew up watching Anderson Silva, you know, and he ends up kicking Anderson Silva. But it was like this guy was his hero. You know what I'm saying? And so there's a whole generation of guys who start to. But I mean,
let me ask you this, like, you bring your wife into this world where she didn't expect to go into.
Right.
How did you end up handling it? Like, how did it affect you, like your career? How did it affect the marriage?
Well, when I first got into stand up, I don't think I was considering myself a full time stand up comedian for at least 7 years. So it was a slow transition, which helped. It wasn't like I just dropped everything after my first open mic. It was like 7 years in, and then I had lost my job, and she had said to me, well, you want to be a full-time stand-up comedian, now's your time to go for it. And I went for it and never looked
back. That was nice.
Yeah,
that was really supportive. Even though she was even though she was uncomfortable with it in the first place.
Yeah, well, she knew we were in a situation where I had, you know, I could mess around for 6 months, and it was almost like, I guess you say there was a six-month window that I had approved to her that I could bring an income.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember some of my first road gigs, my buddy Chris Monty was taking me on the road with him, and I was opening for him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't start headlining for another like 5 years after that, but
right.
I felt like I had, you know, when you first start and you're hosting a lot of shows, you feel like you have 15 minutes for 5 years.
Yeah.
Because every time you get a better joke, you take something out and put it in. And I feel like I had 30 for the longest time, because mm-hmm. when something funnier came along, I'd take this out and put that in, and I still have 30, but it's a little funnier now.
Right.
That was, but man, it was a lot of great memories. And just, you know, and somebody once told me that the middle spot is the easiest spot in show business. And it really is. Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll get the feature for someone.
It's great.
And it's like, this is 20 minutes. Yeah. And then what do? Oh, I go home. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you kidding me?
Plus, you don't have to create a relationship. You know, it's just you hit the gas and you go, it's a drag race. It's a drag race. Me and Godfrey always talk about it, what we call the hot 20 minutes. Okay. So when you get a comic that's really, really, you know, that's headlining, and then you're already a headliner and you get to do the hot 20.
Yes.
You just come in, blah, 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 blah. Good night.
Right.
And then everybody's coming to you going,
you should have headlined.
You should have. And then you're like, nah, you don't understand.
Yes. I always say that. You don't know. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They always say you should have headlined. They don't know what it takes and how much more work it is to headline. And like you're saying, create that relationship and spread that hot 20 out.
Yeah.
It's amazing that your girl was so supportive, man, because it's a dicey situation.
Yeah, that's such
situation.
A rare thing to do.
But there was
boundaries too, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There were a few times where she said to me, she goes, wow, you know, money was getting tight. And this is before I got on Kevin's show. And there was a couple things I was looking into. I was thinking about driving a cab just to get some more income in. She was saying, you know, the stand-up and obviously is not bringing enough income.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at the driving a cab. I actually called SAG after, and I was thinking about going financial, you know, FICOR, they call it.
What is that? Oh, where you can do
union and non-union.
Yeah.
And right around there, I got on Kevin's show and things were good for a few years. But now it's like, I'm thinking about calling SAG again, saying, hey, I'm thinking about going FICOR, you know?
Right.
You know, that's
how long did you do? You did Kevin as wait, Kevin. Kevin can wait.
Yeah, that was two seasons
of Kevin Can Wait, or was
two seasons of Kevin Can Wait. It was like geared. It was like almost a ground ball to last five seasons, and you know they just tried making it better. And I thought they were heading in that direction. I thought it was great as it was, and then they made all these changes, and I was like, uh oh. But then season two came along, and they looked like they were fixing things, and then it was a real shocker for everybody when they canceled it.
Mm. Like you said, Harry, I'm interested in knowing that. So it was basically, she was like, look, give it a shot. But she was also like, okay, these are the parameters. We need to survive financially. What does she do for a living?
She's a hairdresser and colorist and master colorist. But she also, you know, like me, she's realized it's like her business kind of went downhill over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
People doing their hair by themselves at their own homes. And, but like she, like myself, is trying to diversify. We started, she started boarding dogs at the house. We got, and also looking into other options, launching a candle business, whatever, you know, it's just anything to prevent us from having to like sit at a desk and
right.
call somebody boss.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So and both of you had that kind of mindset in the beginning that you always kind of had this entrepreneurial spirit.
You never wanted to. Yeah, you wanted to.
Now, did you know that all along, or when you met her? Or
yeah, when I met her, she owned a hair salon.
But
she
was that a conversation that you had about that she never wanted to work, or did you just kind of get lucky that your kind of mindset was the same?
I say, yeah, kind of lucky that our mindset was the same. But, you know, there's been conversations where like, one of us is going to have to bring in more money somehow. And,
right.
You know, that's another reason why I got the voiceover stuff. I'm like, I've always tickled around the doing voiceovers, but never really dove into it, made a voiceover studio. And so I'm working on a few things with some friends, cartoons and stuff like that. And let me try to go for it, you know, get more auditions. When the voiceover agency, the voiceover department of Buckwold sees I'm more serious about it, hopefully I'll get more auditions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too, that you, you know, to see something like you were on Kevin Can Wait is a major kind of sitcom.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of guys that we know that, you know, people are seeing on TV. They're on TV. They're doing this. They're doing that. And then some of them, you know, how many guys I know who 40, mid 40s, and they got three roommates. You know, they're living in Astoria. And then it's kind of like this feast of famine thing with it.
So that also speaks, Dante, to like not letting the image we see, because Instagram will fuck you up that. TikTok, only put the best part of themselves out there, and sometimes not even a real part of themselves. Sometimes they'll create a whole fictional thing, and you think like, man, I'm not doing as well as everybody, just in life, even if it's not in show business, just in life. You go, oh, look at all these people doing amazing shit, and I'm not doing. And you have to be cognizant of like the reality of it. It's not all real. It's not.
In fact, almost none of it is real. You know?
Right.
And even the part that's real is exploded out or so hyperbolic because you don't see any of the other stuff. It's like we're here talking about this, and you went on a major thing. I've been in major feature films.
Yeah.
And you got egg cartons in the back of the room,
right?
You know, still pushing.
Worrying about the next paycheck, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll do these podcasts sometimes, and people interview me, and they go, tell us about your big break. I'm like, my big break? I'm still living in my dad's house.
Yeah.
No, it was a great opportunity. It was really a fantastic opportunity. But it's really a journey, man. If you don't enjoy the journey, you're going to go crazy. I enjoyed the camaraderie with other comics and even the shit gigs, you know, something you can laugh
about. That's the other part is kind of like we talked about being grateful. And I think that's important, too. Like I found myself, I have to catch myself every once in a while because I could be very negative, Dante, believe it or not.
I don't know. I mean, I swear I would have never thought that about you ever.
Tad bit negative, like, you know, I have a spot tonight and I looked at the time and I did the math. I go, oh fuck, I'm going on first, aren't I?
Like, right. Fuck, you're taking the bullet.
I'm tired of going on first or going on last.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm
tired of going on last. But,
You're like, you know what? Last week I got bumped off a show entirely because, you know, a celebrity came in to do a set. So it's like you have to be grateful and like, hey, I have to remember, I get to do comedy.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, like you have to find it and be grateful for what you have. And also the happiness comes from within. It doesn't come from the career is the other thing I have to learn. So no matter what you're doing, you know, job wise, you have to find that happiness within and find the joy within, which is a blessing and a curse because it's not based on your job, but you have to figure it out.
What do you mean by that, Harry? I mean,
meaning like, you know, I know. We both know very successful people with a lot of money who are miserable as fuck.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some of the most famous and some of the most financially secure people are the most emotionally insecure people because they didn't learn anything along the way, or they just keep taking it for granted, or they didn't fix any of the issues they have. And they're trying to base their happiness on the next gig that they get financially. Right. Or I'm trying not to keep it to show business, but let's just say, fuck it. Like whatever business venture. Right. I mean, how many stockbrokers and shit do you know? They're just drinking themselves and getting coked up because they're miserable because the entire basis of their happiness is the next big deal. And when the deal is done, they celebrate that for a moment, and then they have to do it again and find another one. And when your happiness is based on something like that, that's outside of yourself, it becomes problematic because you're constantly chasing it, where you have to kind of figure out, like, inside of yourself, you can be happy with a lot of things. Look, man, I have clean drinking water, right? I should be happy that I have clean drinking water, something that a huge part of the world does not have access to.
That's right.
You know, like, there are people who get up today and they don't know if they're going to make it till the end of the
day. Or they're walking 5 miles to get drinking water.
Right.
You know,
right.
To
right.
carry it back 5 miles, you know.
And so I bitch that the DVR doesn't work or that the Wi-Fi is too slow. And, you know, you can get caught up in all that shit and just end up being miserable.
That's right.
Well, the COVID kind of, you know, like, I got to a, you know, you reach a, you know, Chris, and I know you know what I mean. It's like you reach a level of you've been doing this so long. There's a level of expertise that you just you're able to, you know, you believe you're at this level of expertise. You know, when you go in a room, you know what your material, you know, you can, you know, even if you bomb on a scale of 1 to 10, the bomb is a what? A 6.5, 7, you know what I mean? It ain't even a bomb, really. But, you know, the COVID, not being able to do comedy, not be able to do, babe, I mean, I got to the point where there were certain bar shows. I'm like, I'm not doing that, and fuck that, and this and that. It's not enough money, and it's this. And then when the COVID, when it started opening up, I was so hungry to get on stage. I realized how much we love this. I always tell this story that it was one night, one winter, it was 12 degrees. I'm on a rooftop, right? When I'm on a rooftop with a fur coat on, and there's 27 people, 27 couples in sleeping bags and bundled up with blankets and heaters on a roof, listening to me tell dick jokes, you know?
Right, right.
And you go, as much as they said that this wasn't essential work, it was, because people, you know, yeah, I get it. Once you have food and toilet paper and those things, these other things that are human in itself are, they're just as important. They're just as essential. You know, I was like, this is cold. You know, that kind of cold. Where, and I wouldn't wear a hat because, you know, like, you know, I sit down when I'm on stage. So it's like my facial expression is really important. And so you don't want to wear a hat because you can't see your face. And man, that cold was whipping me upside the head. And I was like, man, I was like, I wouldn't pay to see me in this weather. You know what I mean? But they were out there thick. I mean, did you do any of that stuff, any of those outdoor stuff, roof stuff?
Yeah. I did a few outdoor shows where, and I always say, like, I don't feel like I've taken the crowds for granted, but I really, really appreciate them now. Where I appreciated them before, but now even more. I did the one Jay Nog had that drive-in one.
Yeah.
that was fun.
Yeah.
I got to do this just for an experience. And I did a couple outdoor shows. And when I was doing a couple in Pennsylvania, and these people were showing up in their lawn chairs, and they were just starving for live entertainment. For live entertainment.
Yeah.
To get out.
Yeah. It was, after a while, people, you don't realize the humanity you know, that the whole social experiment is just as important.
But
as
beyond that, like, it's also about, you know, fixing the things that make you unhappy, you know, or being like, if you hate your job, you go, all right, why do I hate my job? What is it about this that I don't like? How can I change it? How can I find something else? You know, trying to fix those things instead of, like, sitting in the misery, because that can happen. People can end up sitting, you know, being in a shit job. It's not fun. And you just blame life. And if you want to make the changes, like anything, whether it comes to relationships or women or your finances, you have to look at it, analyze it realistically, and go, how much of it is me bitching? How much of it can I change? And what can I do to change it?
Yeah. The other thing I find is interesting that you have a lot of times people have an idea of what you know, they feel like success is elusive, but they've never really defined what the success is in the first place. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you don't know what the finish line is, you also don't, how do you know when you get there? You know, right. Like how much, you know, how much money is it? How much, I mean, what kind of show is it? I mean, who do you want to work with? What do you want to do? Go ahead. Yeah. If you don't have a real understanding of what the finish line looks like, then you never really know if you've ever, you know, so many, and Harry, you and I have talked about this a lot. Like so many people like, look, you're selling out at clubs, but now you want theaters,
right?
You know, you're selling out theaters, but now you want arenas. You know what I mean?
I want to be on TV. Now I want to be in movies. Yeah. Now I want to be the lead in movies. Oh, yeah. Now I want to win an Oscar. Now I want to win 2 Oscars.
Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, because you could get lost in all that stuff and just be chasing around and be no happier than you would have. Sometimes I think we put the happiness on the finances.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, look, money helps make things easier. There's no doubt about it.
We personally know. I mean, everybody knows rich people that have fucking OD'd on drugs. I mean, how big was Kurt Cobain, dog? You know?
Sure.
And we're
biggest
not even
rock star
about,
in the world at that point. Biggest rock star in the world.
Just, you know, I mean, we're not talking about just, you know, living a rough life. We're talking about purposely took themselves out at the level of the highest level that you could understand. And they're literally took themselves out. But we know, you know, there's people that. I'll tell you, Harry, we kind of talked about it. There was this kid. So this young kid was doing this show. I was on the other day. Right. And he does my writer's workshop. And apparently the kid, I don't know if he's 20 something, early 20s. And apparently in high school, some guy who basically took his identity, stole his identity. Right. And took over his identity. I don't know if he messed up his money or something like that, but he also had a Facebook page, and the girlfriend that he had at the time in high school, the girl ended up breaking up with him because of some of the stuff that this guy did stole his identity. Right.
Right.
So fast forward, you know, this is 5 years ago. So, I mean, so that means how old is the kid that probably
if he graduated from high school 5 years ago? 24,
22, 23, 22, 24, 22, something yeah. like that. So, he has this friend of his who in his own mind says he describes the guy as kind of a mook, just like an idiot, like really kind of unaware of the social dynamics of people. He oversteps his boundaries, says the inappropriate things. So this kid is doing a bringer show. He's got to bring a certain amount of people. This guy brings 5 people to his show, friends of theirs, people who didn't know. And he brings the guy who stole his identity.
Identity, yeah.
Right. He brings that guy, right? Not only that, but he says to the comic, he goes, oh, I got a surprise for you. Right. And he goes, I got a big surprise for you. He brings the 5 people. And one of the guys who stole his identity is the guy. This is the surprise. So in this guy's mind, it's oh, you know, that was funny. That remember
how
he
funny.
Stole.
Yeah. How funny is this?
He stole your identity and made you break up with the only girlfriend you ever had. And blah, 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 right. And so the kid is I pull up to the show. And this kid is losing his mind. Like he wants to leave. He doesn't want to perform. He doesn't, you know, he's just he's like losing his mind. And I kind of go, so, you know, I initially give him the speech. Listen, you're always going to be doing things, people in crowds, clubs. There's always going to be people that you don't like. You know, don't let people control your life by renting space in your head. You know, we a lot of times we'll have relationships and stuff with our parents and stuff, and maybe they don't think we're good enough, or they're and then we're 40 years old later and we're still holding on to that, and we're proving to them that we're good enough, and they're dead, they're worm food already, and they have no real control over your life, and we're still proving to them that we're good enough, you know. So I gave him that.
This is freaking him out. I mean, this is something that's affecting him.
And the kid comes. The kid is taking a bus from D.C. to come and do this show. So he does comedy in D.C., but he's here to do this show at a real club, and it's important to him. But he's so freaked out now that he literally doesn't want to go on. He goes, I don't know. I want to wring this guy's neck. I want to do this. I don't know if I want to ring that guy's neck or the guy, the guy who brought him or whatever. And I'm talking to this kid, and the guy, the mook, he's like, "When are you going up? When are you going up, bro? When are you going?" He's just like, and he's just solely oblivious to what's going on.
The kid ends up not going up eventually.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I give him the speech about, look, you're gonna always have it. He goes, look, I got anxiety and I got this. I go, look, it doesn't matter. He goes, so there was two shows back to back. I said, what if you don't perform on this show and you perform on the next show? I'll get you a spot on the next show. He goes, I have a bus ticket to go back to D.C. at 9:00. I'm not going to be able to make the bus. I said, I'll pay for your bus ticket. Wow. He goes, well, you know, I'm dog watching. I got to get the dog the medication. I go, well, he goes, well, is the dog going to die? He goes, no, the dog, you know, I mean, I could not feed the, you know, we're going back. I go, look, you don't want to do this. It's fine that you don't want to do it. I go, but I tried to remove every, so I'll take your bus ticket. I'm not going to drive you back to D.C., but I'll give you another bus ticket. I'll get you another spot. So, Chris, I go. So I'm doing everything I can do to remove the obstacles. He also can't believe that I'm taking so much of an interest in all of this anyway, right?
Right.
He's lucky he found you, because any other comic might not have cared.
Yeah.
Might like, not have been invested if it wasn't you, and it wasn't Kim, the producer of the show, who's also very sweet and kind.
Yeah.
Anybody else would have been like, well, too bad. We got to keep it moving. Don't care.
Right. So he goes, I go, look, if you go home, you don't have to perform. The guy goes, you know, is this going to cost me anything with the producer? I go, nothing's going to happen. You'll be fine. Right. So
made it easiest for him.
Easy as it could be. I couldn't have made it any easier. And so he goes, he leaves, and the guy comes out. And he says, the guy basically says, I was waiting for my friend to go up. He didn't go up. And you know, Harry will tell you, I can't not, you know, I mean, I was bullied as a kid. So I can't, I go, well, he left because you fucking brought this guy who stole his identity. I go, and he's like, bro, it was 5 years ago. And now I'm going, you don't get to fucking decide whether it bothers him or not. It's not your pain. You don't get to decide when it could be 20 years from now. So now I'm getting heated. So I go to the kid. I go, let me ask you something. I go, say I punch you in your fucking mouth. And then I see you 5 years later. And I go, you know, it was 5 years ago. I punched you in your fucking mouth. He goes, and the weird thing is, he was so dense. There was like, yeah, I guess I would. Like, he didn't even understand the dynamic of how angry I was, and that I was literally kind of threatening him in the same sense. Because the example was, say I punch you in your fucking mouth.
He really gave it legit thought. Like, huh, okay, like, oh, what if you did punch me in the mouth? So, 5 years from now,
he backs up, right? I really didn't think of it like that. And he goes, well, you know, and then he takes two steps back and he does like any idiot does, which is interesting because, like I always say this to Harry, assholes have no problem being assholes.
Yep.
It's so comfortable swimming in assholeness, you know? He goes, he says, you know, I definitely humbled. I didn't think of it this way. And I really, he, and then he takes two steps back and charges again. But he says, come on, but if you want to be the best comic in the world, you want to be Dave Chappelle, you want to be the greatest comic ever, you have to excel past. You can't let these things bother you. And you can't let this stuff bother you. You got to keep pushing. You got to keep not be unstoppable. You got to. And I say to this dude, I go, what the fuck are you talking about? I go, Dave Chappelle walked away from a $50 million contract because he wasn't comfortable about the artistic direction. I go, Greg Giraldo OD'd on heroin. I go, Mitch Fatel OD'd on heroin.
Mitch Hedberg
OD'd on heroin. I go, time and time again, people have pulled away because of, I go, Eddie Murphy has not done stand-up since, what, Delirious was first or Raw was first?
Raw was second.
Raw,
1989, Raw.
Still talking about coming back and never coming back because there's so much pressure and so much involved. I go, who the fuck? I go, have you? I said, it was funny because I was just thinking about the Olympics and what's Dawes just pulled out of the fucking Olympics. Maybe one of the greatest Olympians, gymnastic Olympians of all time. Osaka just pulled out of the Open, the French Open. I go, have you achieved any degree of success on any of those people's level? And so who the fuck are you to talk about what people could do or what they can't do? It's just so absurd. He goes, I didn't get it until you started talking about punching me in the face. I'm like, all right, what the fuck? What are you going to?
Sometimes that's what people need.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, so Simone Biles, by the way, this just Simone happened, revealed that she was dealing with a family tragedy. Her aunt died unexpectedly while she was at the Olympics. So while everyone's bitching and moaning about her not being strong enough, which is bullshit, none of your fucking business, anyone complaining that she wasn't tough enough, she was dealing with, you know, she's a teenager dealing with somebody who died. Her aunt dying, somebody in her family dying,
somebody very close,
but nobody
to,
knew. Right. So everybody's yapping away, but it just goes to show you like this fucking dude is just that didn't give a fuck, being very oblivious to other people's feelings and not giving a shit, having no empathy.
Yeah. No empathy.
Having no empathy, which we talk about all the time, is having empathy. Ace, authenticity, credibility, and empathy, not having empathy and putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. Like, what would this be like? And those people are some of the, I mean, they're some of the worst people in the world. No empathy. That's the number one characteristic that you find from the worst people in the world. They
what
all
was
have
the,
no
the,
empathy.
The girl got caught smoking weed and her mother, the one that was supposed to be, she was supposed to on in track.
The fastest and, runner in the world.
Shikara. Is it Shikara?
Hold on. I'll find it. I forgot what her name is.
She got caught smoking weed.
Carrie Richardson.
Shikari Richardson.
Sorry.
Right. So she was raised by her grandmother and another woman that she called her mother, and she found out that her biological mother died while she was doing an interview about going to the Olympics. Well, how are you gonna affect that your mother passed away? And she was like, my mother, like, she's in the fucking interview.
Oh man.
So the kind of to ease the pain, she ended up smoking a joint, and the Olympic, I guess the board or one of the things that they say is no outside substances, and they actually say that marijuana is on the list for not and she tested smoking a joint after her mother died. And she got pulled out. Chris, you want to hang out for a little bit? We're gonna do like a few minutes after the Patreon. Plug your social media and stuff real quick. Anything you got going on?
Yeah, well, let's see. Instagram, it's @RoachComic. TikTok, it's at Chris Roach Live, and my website is chrisroachlive.com.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
You can go to my website, ihatecomedy.com, and all my stuff at Harry Turjanian, and join us over at Patreon. We're going to be talking more stories. Maybe we'll tell that other story that happened, too, that's even more.
Yeah.
You want to talk about learning a lesson about
making
it uncomfortable for everybody and the lesson that goes like making it uncomfortable for assholes.
Yeah.
We have a story and a doozy over at Patreon that we're probably going to tell in a couple minutes here. So come and join us at patreon.com/manschool202.
And your stuff, Harry, real quick.
Just add Harry Turjanian. That's where you can find me. My stuff.
You can check all my stuff. Just Google me, Dante Nero. All my stuff comes up. Instagram is
my stand up on YouTube, by the way. Not enough people are watching that stuff. It's good stuff.
Dante Nero. GYBB, Get Your Balls Back. WWDD, What Would Dante Do? Sexual Revolutions being podcasted. Yo, I love y'all. Support us on the Patreon so we can keep doing this. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.